Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. And as we do every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock, we welcome in our friend Caroline Fenton from Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. And it's kind of a tough morning for Caroline this morning. Caroline, I'm glad you're with us. Are you okay, given what happened to your beloved Tigers the other night?
No. Of course not. I haven't been okay, and I never will be ever okay again. And it's like I can live with a loss where you played well, you know, you played tough, you lose a close game. It just comes down to who has the last possession and who scores last. Like I can live with that. Say, okay, you know, you got bested by a really good team, but there's a lot of good things that you can take from it, and you still feel confident about where this team is moving forward. Like I said from the very beginning, whichever team loses this game, you know, it's not over because they're two really good teams. But I don't know what kind of good I can take away from that game. I didn't step away from it like, dang, darn it, you just lost to a really good team. I just saw a whole lot of bad that does not make me feel encouraged about this team in the slightest.
It was really wild because the first half, I mean, I thought it was going to be exactly what you said, maybe coming down to the last possession, and there were mistakes made by both sides in the first half. Yeah. But, I mean, it's, you know, really good game at halftime. The domination in the second half, like it's hard for me to kind of explain what happened to LSU in the second half. And ultimately, I guess that comes back on Brian Kelly.
100%. And I was having major Titans-Giants flashbacks from last season of you look like the better team in the first half. That you don't look like a great team. You know, you don't look like a perfect team, but you're right. The better team in the first half, and you have the edge and the advantage going into the locker room. And I guess for some reason, they felt like being up by a field goal at the half, that they could just sit back, kick their heels up, light up a cigarette, and chill. Because that's what it looked like. They just came out. They looked unmotivated. They looked lethargic. They looked unprepared. They didn't look very confident. Like, they didn't look like LSU. And Florida State took advantage of that. And it really, you know, going up into the halves, up 17-14, I mean, LSU really should have been up like 28-14. Yep. Some of the opportunities that the refs gave them, some of the opportunities that Florida State handed them. I mean, Florida State did not play a very good first half, but they made the adjustments at halftime that LSU just simply did not make. And that it falls on the coaching staff, how they were not motivated in the second half, how they didn't make adjustments in the second half. It falls on the coaching staff that the best player on that roster was not playing his natural position and was basically a complete no-show in that game, and Harold Perkins. That falls on the coaching staff. And look, you know, the players needed to play better. You know, the receivers needed to catch balls. The interior offensive line needed to protect better. But overall, I view that as a coaching staff loss. And there needs to be, you know, some big come to Jesus moments from now until SEC play begins in week three against Mississippi State for this team to even come close to realizing the expectations I think that all of the college football world really had for this team.
So I've always thought Brian Kelly's a really good coach, but Carolina, I wasn't just totally sure about where things are going to go. I mean, obviously LSU's going to have good teams under him and all that, but I don't know. Do you have a different? I mean, it's one game. It's week one. We all overreact to week one. But, like, do you have less confidence in him overall based on that?
Honestly, I do. It does kind of change my perception. And it's not just based off of one game. I think it's one game that is unfortunately following a scary trend of what we've seen in the Brian Kelly era so far. Brian Kelly's lost 5 games at LSU, but I'm going to throw one out. I'll throw the SEC championship loss against Georgia out, just because everyone's going to lose against Georgia. So I'll look at the Florida State loss last year, the Tennessee loss last year, the A&M loss last year, and the Florida State loss this year. Those were all blowouts. And the Florida State loss last year, yeah, it was a 1-point game, but you looked atrocious while doing it. You got blown out by Tennessee. You got blown out by a Texas A&M team that went 5-7 and was honestly really bad. You got blown out by Florida State. Again, I can live with close losses against good teams. What I can't live with is blowouts when you can't make adjustments and when you stick by the game plan that just simply is not working. Why does this team consistently get blown out? why does this team look unprepared when you had all offseason to prepare for it? Last year, I could chalk it up to, okay, first game as a head coach in your first year here, you got a whole lot of new pieces. You're working with a whole lot of newness. It's week one. There's going to be sloppiness and you're going to have some teaching moments. Year two as a coaching staff, some of those mistakes are simply just unacceptable. It's the same thing that I said about Florida. Year two as a coaching staff, those sloppy mistakes that we saw from Florida on Thursday night against Utah are just simply unacceptable. So what I want to look for now is how they turn things around. My question all offseason with Brian Kelly is, you were able to get your team motivated when you had no expectations. Now, the whole world is looking at you. You're a top five team in the country. Everyone is expecting you to go back to the SEC championship, to win a whole lot of games. So how can you motivate this team now that you have all of the expectations in the world and now that you are the hunted instead of the hunters? And right now, he's failed that test.
Caroline Fenton with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Caroline, speaking of disappointments, Clemson gets throttled last night by Duke, 28-7.
That made me feel better.
And they've lost three in a row dating back to last year. South Carolina, Tennessee in the Orange Bowl, obviously, and now Duke to begin this year. What do you make of where that program is? Or is the, I guess, the championship window with Dabo Swinney, is it closed in your mind moving forward?
So, I, going into it, kind of thought a couple of different things and a couple of different maybe contrasting views was, one, is Clemson really a top 10 team? And two, you know, Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, those teams are getting the benefit of the doubt where, you know, Alabama wasn't a college football playoff team last year, but they were still a top four team preseason where everyone expects Alabama to do great things. And I didn't feel that Clemson had those similar expectations. So I was thinking, well, are we not giving Clemson the benefit of the doubt maybe too early? That it's only been a couple of years removed since Clemson was in the college football playoff, and we're not talking about Clemson going back to the college football playoff. Are we moving on from Clemson a little bit too soon? And I think the answer we got last night was, nope, we're moving on. That this college football train is moving on. This college football playoff train is moving on without Dabo Swinney and without Clemson. And yeah, I would say that the window is closed. And I think that now more so than ever, it's very clear that Dabo finds so much success when he has that special quarterback. And you would say, well, duh, obviously. Like, yeah, every coach can find success when they find that special quarterback. But Nick Saban has been able to do special things without a special quarterback. I think Harbaugh has been able to do special things without special quarterbacks. Dabo has not been able to do that. And until he finds that next Trevor Lawrence, until he finds that next Deshaun Watson, then Clemson will be a 9-3, 10-2 team that might go to the ACC championship, that might not. But if I'm Florida State, after what I saw last night, I'm kicking back and thinking, all right, great. We're winning this conference, and I don't think it's going to be too particularly difficult.
So, Deion Sanders, a fan or no?
No.
No? Oh, come no. On. Get on the Deion train.
Joe's
after
all in.
What
I want to play Deion, for the guy.
After what I heard Deion say after the game, look, I was skeptical of what Deion could do at Colorado. But I thought, okay, show me you can do it. And what better opportunity against the reigning national champion runner up? And they did it. And I thought, good for that team. Good for those guys. When the over under win total for Colorado was what, like 3.5 games?
Yeah, it's bad.
And you shock the world in week one. Good for you. And then I hear Deion Sanders post game call out writers for things that they wrote, asking if writers believe or not. It felt very self-indulgent, and it felt very me.
In some cases, thought, people that don't even write.
Right. It's like it's not their job to believe in the team. They cover the team. They're not fans of the team. So it just felt very self-indulgent, and I wanted Deion to approach it more of a, oh, you saw that? Well, we have so much more left to prove, and we will continue to show you, and we will continue to prove it to you. Where I felt like after one win, Deion felt like his job was done, and I felt like he didn't give enough credit to those players, and I did not like that. But credit to Deion. He did what I didn't think he could do, and now they're taking on a Nebraska team that I think is, you know, a very beatable team. Yeah. Colorado very much could be 2-0 against two Power 5 opponents going into the season.
So many haters. So many haters.
Joe's got his Buffs jersey on right now. He's ready to go.
Pretty much, man.
But why do you love Deion so much?
Oh, I just – hey. I
he saw the pregame speech, and he's fired up about it.
The pregame speech was amazing.
The pregame speech was sick.
But
that's why.
I mean, I just –
the postgame speech left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was weird, the whole thing with the word. But he is weird, you know. But, man, the results – I'm sold, man. Like, it's absurd what he's done. It's absurd. Now, they'll lose by two touchdowns in Nebraska.
Nebraska's coming in down, ready to just knock them out. Yeah.
I mean, actually, more than Deion, I think I'm just a fan of, like those two kids, his kid and then Travis Hunter. My gosh. I'm so pumped to see him again. I want to get right to that game.
He's my Heisman pick after week one.
Oh, yeah.
Mail in my ballot. Travis Hunter.
Yeah, they look
great.
You
do it all. You look great.
Last thing for you, Caroline, the SEC. South Carolina loses to North Carolina. You brought up the Florida-Utah game there. You know, obviously, you know, LSU and Florida State as well. What do you make of where the SEC is at right now, and how big of a, I guess, red flag was week one with some of the non-conference matchups?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't great. I was talking about this last week, and I was asked, you know, in those three tough games, because I know Tennessee played a Power 5 opponent, but, like, did they? Yeah. So in those three games, Florida, Utah, UNC, USC, and LSU, Florida State, what do you think the SEC's record will be in those games? And I was being maybe generous and saying 2-1, because I thought, I really think that they can go 3-0, especially, you know, given the Cam Rising news that he wasn't going to be playing against Utah. So I thought maybe Florida still loses that game just because they're not a very good team. But I could see South Carolina and LSU winning both of those games. The SEC could go 2-1, but I see a path to 3-0. Boy, oh boy, was I wrong. Boy, oh boy, am I an SEC bobo. It's not great for the conference. No, especially because I think that the SEC has a little bit of a target on its back, not just given the on-the-field success, but with conference realignment, I think everyone points to the SEC for basically ruining college football. And now every other conference can say, well, you thought that you were all high and mighty, and now we're all beaten up on your teams. So, no, it's not a great look. Yes, I still think an SEC team is going to win the national championship. But also, it's week one. And I think that we all have a tendency to overreact to what we saw in week one, because it's all that we have to go off of. And we've all been so starved for college football that we're just going to take, you know, every single second that was played on the field and put all of our coins in the middle based off of what we saw. But no, it was not a very good look by the conference, given that. And all three of those SEC teams kind of looked like crap.
Yeah, they did not look great. No question about that. Caroline Fenton with us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock here on the program. Caroline, thanks for being with us, and we'll be listening today at 11 o'clock.
Let's go, Buffs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Caroline Fenton.
My new team now.
Here on Robbie and Rexo. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll get a little bit into the SEC coming up next. How concerned should SEC fans be based on what we saw in week one? That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.